את התשובה. 6-2.
Special request.
My special order.
What
did I have up to? 7?
Yeah, up to 7.
Okay. Over to Chuba, Paraglav, Ose Bays.
I guess we'll start like this.
One of the big shilas
in Jewish history is
why the Rambam did not include the mitzvah of Chuba
in his count of the 613 mitzvahs.
Why did the Rambam not count Chuba as one of the 613 mitzvahs?
In addition to it not being counted as one of the 613 mitzvahs, it stands out even more so that the Rambam, in the beginning of Hilchos Tshuva, the 10 Prakim of Hilchos Tshuva, so you know that in the beginning of every section of the Arach HaZaka, and I don't mean every book, I mean every section, the beginning of the laws of Hilchos Tshuva, the beginning of the laws of Matnas Aniyah, in the beginning of every section, the Rambam enumerates how many mitzvahs are in this particular section, which gives the Rambam another chance to kind of scoop up a few other mitzvahs. So in the Rambam's counting of the mitzvahs in Tshuva, in the Hakdama to Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam writes, and he makes it more clear in the initial halachos, that the Rambam writes b'lashon mitzvah that there's a mitzvah to do vidui. There's a mitzvah to admit one's averus. The Rambam does not do, however, is count or speak of the mitzvah of Tshuva, to do the whole process of Tshuva, which is to stop doing the averos, to regret doing the averos, to be misvada in front of Kadosh Baruch Hu and Kabbalah la'asik, and to accept for the future not to do these things again. The Rambam speaks b'lashon tzivui as if there's some sort of command to express, to admit our chataim, but he does not count as one of the 613 mitzvahs of Tshuva. A lot of the achronim try to figure that out. It's one of the big questions in Jewish history. Why the Rambam omitted the mitzvah of Tshuva. So there are those who would say, there are a lot of different answers to this question, but there are those who would say that the reason the Rambam omitted, the mitzvah of Tshuva from the 613 is that Tshuva is not really a mitzvah in the classical sense. Tshuva, as we're going to see from Rav Kook, is a guarantee. Tshuva is mukhrach. Tshuva will absolutely happen. And because it's mukhrach, because it must happen, because it absolutely will happen, without us choosing or not choosing, because it is a guarantee, the Rambam did not want to count it as a mitzvah in the classic sense of the word, even though it is a positive commandment in a certain sense to abstain from doing averos, to admit one's wrongdoing, to regret it, and have kavanah la'asid. Nonetheless, the Rambam didn't really count it. So Rav Kook writes, "Hatshuva hi tamid shruya v'lev." Kook says tshuva is something which is always expressing itself internally in the heart. It's not externally expressing itself all the time, in the same way that Rav Kook writes about tefillah, that a person's tefillah is not really tikkuna, is not expressing itself properly, elami tocha machshava, unless a person really understands that be'emes haneshama tamid mitzvah. The neshama is always that. And tshuva, in a certain sense, is also not properly understood unless we know that tshuva is tamid shruya b'lev. Tshuva is an active force that is happening whether we're conscious of it or we're not conscious of it. But listen to this. It says, Rav Kook, afilu be'ez hachet. Even at the very moment that we sin against the Ribbono Shel Olam, at the very moment of chet, Atzmo, hatshuva genuza hi b'neshama. The tshuva is hidden within the recesses of the neshama at the very moment that you're going against the Ribbono Shel Olam. In the Muslim movement, Yerushalayim Salanter used to say, why do I give so much Musar to my Talmidim? Do I really think that this is absolutely going to change every single one of them? No, not necessarily. And if a person says, you know, as a Rebbe, as a friend, as a parent, as a brother, says, you know, there's someone who's like way off. And if I'm going to start talking to them about, you know, doing tshuva, doing a particular tikkun in their midos, in their actions, in their speech, in their thought, and something, it's not going to do anything. So first of all, you should know that Rabbi Nachman says that if you give musar to somebody and they're not makabel it, there's an or chozer. If you ever try to give musar to yourself, I'll take a mushel, right? If you ever try to tickle yourself, it doesn't work. You can't tickle yourself. I don't know why that is. It's a remarkable phenomenon. Maybe some psychologists, not scientists, is back. Maybe somebody could explain to me why you can't tickle yourself. Because you're touching the same, you know, ticklish part of your arm or of your leg or whatever it is, and it doesn't tickle you. You know that when people on the knee, you put your fingers on the knee and then you spread them out, you can make someone crazy. But if you do it to yourself, it doesn't work. I don't know. So the same thing is true maybe of musar. If a person tries to give musar to themselves, it's very difficult. It's very, very difficult. The moment that you're giving musar to yourself, it's not as powerful if somebody's yelling at you as if you're yelling at yourself in the mirror. It doesn't really work that way. So Rabbi Nachman says, if you give musar to somebody and they're not makabalit, there's an or chozer, that it bounces off of them and comes back to you in a way that you wouldn't be able to necessarily give it to yourself. So that's number one. That's Rabbi Nachman. Sugrayim. That's in parentheses. Now back to the other parentheses. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter would say that if you give musar to somebody else and they're not makabel, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, why is that still kedai? Because even though you might still be so distant from correcting this negative trait, from correcting this negative action, this negative speech, this negative way of thinking, even though you might be so far away from correcting that way of living, Afal Pikein, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, my goal is not always to get you to act differently, but that when you're doing those same averos, it's not as gishmak. Yeah. I'm taking away some of the gishmak. And I'm doing that to you not because I don't love you, I'm doing it to you because every little bit of gishmak that I take away from it is saving you from countless years of torturing yourself, being in self-destructive. I'm not even talking about Olam Haba. I'm talking about an Olam Hazeh. If I can steal a little bit of the gishmak from the Avera, then it'll save you years and hours of self-reflection, of eating your own heart out because of the self-destructive behavior that you find yourself trapped in forever. So even if I can't get you to stop, I can get you to enjoy it less, which in turn will grant you a greater ability to have self-control and to eventually dig yourself out of this pit. Rav Kook says, no, none of that. Rav Kook, who is more from the camp of, you know, again, we're not saying gradations here in this way, but Rav Kook, who is a synthesizer, Rav Kook, who is studying Pnimis HaTorah, who has spent his whole life screaming about studying Pnimis HaTorah, says that even at the moment of Chet, forget about Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's Musar, even if you never heard Musar about this thing in your life, you intuitively know, like Rav Kook talks about it in a number of other places, you intuitively know that you're out of sync with the rest of creation, you intuitively know that you're out of sync with the rest of the orchestra. Like Rav Kook even gives a head nod to this mushroom, but he doesn't say it explicitly. It's like a person who's in the middle of a symphony, and he's like, he plays the cymbals, and the violin is in the middle of his like solo, and it's so beautiful, and it's so moving, and it's so emotional, and all of a sudden, you, either by accident, because the wind blew, and now you lost your place, or because you just don't know how to read the sheet music because you didn't study well enough, all of a sudden, the height of the violin solo, when he just gets so gentle, and it's pulling at your heartstrings, all of a sudden you go, shh, and you mess up the whole thing for everybody. And you automatically feel that, says Rav Kook, because at the very moment of chet, a person is pulled towards tshuva. And not only is it that feeling of, oh my gosh, I just messed up the whole symphony, but there's something sweet. It's so dark, it's so thin, it's so gentle, you almost can miss it sometimes. But in the moment of chet, when you catch yourself in that moment of chet, in that very moment there's this one tiny little sweet feeling inside of, this is not me. This is not who I really am. And this chet, at that moment of chet, is being, is it's even the ability to do that chet, your life force in that moment is being drawn from the place of tshuva where you're still connected to Hashem. From that place of purity inside of you, even at the moment of chet. Even at the moment of chet. V'hi sholeches es kaveh. Tshuva at the moment of chet sends forth its rays, kaveh, its lines. It hooks you in, even though as you're like floating out into the abyss, tshuva latches onto you with its rope and it begins to pull you in, even at the moment that you're going away. Shemizgal macher kach be'ish shaba hanochem akor le'tshuva. And that hook, which lies dormant for a while, you may not even feel it at the moment of tshuva. Like the Baal Shem Tov explained that the word chet itself is ches, tes, aleph. Chet. But the aleph is silent. At the moment of chet, there's an aleph, which is alufa shel olam, there's a connection to Hashem, which is latched on in that moment, but you may not even feel it, you may not even hear it. But it's there, and at the right moment, it'll begin to pull you back in. Sometimes it can take years. Sometimes it can take many, many, many years. But at the moment of chet, that's the guarantee of tshuva, which is there all along. You may not actualize it, but you're hooked in at that very moment that you're going away. Tshuva grabs a hold of you. And that is that spark, is what is waiting to be elevated your whole life. And at every moment of your life, to turn that experience from a negative experience into a positive experience, to turn that chov into a zechus. Like we were talking about in the previous parak, in parak hey, we did a few pieces from parak hey last week. When we're talking about tshuva, we have to knock this into our heads and our hearts over and over again. Tshuva is the foundation of everything. It's the foundation of the world. Everything rests on it. In the depth of the experience of chayim, of life, in the experience of life, everything is resting on tshuva. In the sense that we spoke about two times ago, when we spoke about our bravery, our courage to be able to try again, even though we know we're going to fail. But we say, I'm going to try again, knowing I'm probably going to fail. Not I might fail. The Torah says I'm probably going to fail. I'm going to fail. But I'm willing to do it again, because I know even if I fail again, I'll still get up again. And like we spoke about last time, that I don't have to become a hermit and run away from the entire world, which is the opposite reaction I might have. I know I'm going to fail, so I might as well cut off every possibility of failure. And in doing so, I ruin the purpose of creation, which is to engage the world, to lift up the world. Tshuva fixes all of that. And at the depth of the experience of life lies this mystery of tshuva, and everything rests upon it. They, shikadma la'olam. Like we spoke about last time, the Gemara says tshuva is one of the seven things which is created before the world. And because it was created before the world, v'terem shabachit kvar mucheres ha-tshuva imenu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hiktim refuah l'maka, Hashem puts the refuah before He gives us even the possibility of sin. He gives us the tunnel on the way out. V'terem shabachit kvar mucheres ha-tshuva imenu. Therefore, because tshuva is the seed of the world, is the seed that germinates into the world, there is nothing which is more guaranteed than tshuva. Maybe this is not a good mashal, maybe it is a good mashal. But when a person plants a seed, and he says, I want to grow apples. When you plant the seed in the ground, first it rots, and then it begins to sprout. Despite the fact that there's kind of built into the creative process, that's what we learned. That by dint of the fact that we're created and not creators, by definition, the fact that Hashem created us and we're not the creator ourselves, there is going to be a lack. There's going to be chesronan. We're in the fashos rabos v'chesronan. Hashem created us with lacking. And that's the whole purpose of creation. Rav Kook writes in a number of places that the purpose of creation is that it should be lacking, so that it can perfect. Because creation is the point, is the expression of God Himself. It's the Chilak Elokam Yimal, it is the expression of God Himself, of Hashem Himself, which is perfecting instead of being perfect already. So we have to be flawed. It's built in. So when you plant the seed and the tree begins to grow, you say, oh no. The whole purpose of planting this seed was so that apples should grow. But look what's happening. It's gone off course. It's gone off course and wood is growing instead of apples. I wanted apples to grow, but instead there's wood growing. And then I say, oh look, something's happening. Look, my apples are finally coming. And nope, it's a flower. Nope, it's a leaf. Until finally the flower begins to turn into an apple. But it's a guarantee from the moment you put the seed in the ground, it's a guarantee that two things are going to happen. Number one, it's going to go off course from you being the creator, from your mission, which is to create fruit. The guarantee is, number one, it's going to go off course for a little bit. There's going to be a sin. This is maybe a little bit of a deeper understanding of the mystery, that in the beginning of time, Hashem wanted to create fruit trees. That Hashem intended, He wants to create apples. So let the apples come up right away. The Rav Kook writes an Oros HaTshuva about this. Maybe we'll study this next time. Hashem put apples in. It should just be an apple. It should come out of the ground. Just like that. Why does it have to be a trunk and then a whole thing? So Rav Kook writes something different about that in Oros HaTshuva. But for our purposes right now, it has to do with the fact that at first things go off course. First it's wood and then there's flowers and there's leaves and you're like, what? What happened to my apples? But the moment you plant the seed, there's a guarantee that the apple's going to grow. Even if it goes off course for a little bit, it's built into the system, just as it's built into the system that a person, not if you sin, but you are going to for sure make mistakes. It's also built into the system that all of creation will return to God one way or another. Al Kain and Ein Davar Batuach Ba'olam Kama Tshuva. There's nothing which is more guaranteed than Tshuva. Going back to what I said before, if I'm not mistaken, I first heard that Taich in the Rambam's Not Counting in the name of Rav Bital Jolti. In the name of Rav Jolti. I believe Rav Jolti was the first one who I read and heard. I didn't hear from him, but I heard someone say over and read the Makoros. I believe Rav Shalom Rosner was the one who first showed it to me. Rav Jolti was the one who said, if I'm not mistaken, that the reason the Rambam doesn't count Tshuva is because it's a guarantee. It's a guarantee. And it's the most guaranteed thing in the world, more than Meineke. More than Meineke. It's guaranteed. Tshuva. V'sof hakol ashuv l'tikun. In the end, everything will return to its tikun. Because, as I mentioned before, right? I mentioned before that Torah from the Baal Shem Tov, Chet Tet Aleph, and that the Aleph locked you in. You may not; it doesn't make the sound at the moment of Chet. It's just Chet. Chet sounds like Chet Tet. That's it. But in the moment of Chet, there's a built-in Aleph. Aluf Shel Olam is there, and that Chet makes a secret line which hooks you in, and slowly but surely, guaranteed, will pull you in. So that idea made me think, just as I opened the sefer, it made me think of the Maharal and the Netzach Yisrael. The first paragraph of Netzach Yisrael, the Maharal explains that the difference between Galut and Geula, or more precisely, the difference between Gala and Ga'ala, the difference between Gimel Lamed Hey and Gimel Aleph Lamed Hey, which is the difference between exile and redemption. Is an aleph. And I believe with complete faith that Rav Kook, either consciously or subconsciously, is alluding to this teaching from the Maharal. What does the Maharal say? The Maharal says that because the Aluf Shel Olam, because the Rabboni Shel Olam is present in everything and is present even in the exile, so the aleph, that achdus, which is the root upon everything that everything's created, the tshuva, which is bring us back to the Achdus Hashem. Just as there's a guarantee that the Golus must end, so too there's a guarantee that tshuva must happen. What does the Maharal say? The Maharal says an amazing thing. The Maharal says in the first parak of Netzach Yisrael that nature abhors things not being in their most comfortable state, in their natural state. It's one of the laws of physics, that things return to their natural state. If you put energy into something, so it will eventually return to its natural state of being at rest. Zechulu, everything returns to its natural state. So the Maharal says that that's not only true of physics and biology, but it's true of history also. It is unnatural for people to not be in the land that they belong in. It's unnatural for the Jewish people, says the Maharal, to be outside of Eretz Yisrael. To quote the Mashal from Shraga Feivel Mendelevich, which Rav Judah likes to quote all the time, Rav Shraga Feivel said, you think it's normal to be a Jew living in New York just because there's a lot of swarm stores, and a lot of pizza shops, and a lot of restaurants, milchitz, fleishitz, you name it. There's different shuls, and there's different mikvos, and we have everything we could possibly need. But Shraga Feivel said, being a Yid who lives outside of Eretz Yisrael, even with all of these things, is no different than a polar bear in the Bronx Zoo. When you're standing up close next to the glass, and you're looking in, and you can't see your reflection in the glass, so you almost believe that you're standing there in the Arctic tundra, and you see the snow on the ground, and there's hills, and there's like Arctic fish, and there's a beautiful pond, you start to say, yeah, this is pretty cool. There's no hunters around to kill him for his blubber. There's no crazy seals trying to attack him. He's not going to freeze to death. He's not going to starve to death. He has everything he could possibly need. But then you take 3 steps back, and all of a sudden you realize you're in the middle of New York City. What the heck is a polar bear doing in the middle of New York City? It doesn't make any sense. It has everything it could possibly need. It has all the pizza stores, all the farm stores. It has everything it could possibly need. What the heck is it doing in the middle of New York City? There's a polar bear, literally, in the middle of New York City. There's a lion in the middle of New York City. It doesn't make any sense. They belong in their natural place. So the Maharal says, unlike the polar bear, who might stay there forever until he dies, and maybe as individuals, it could be that we'll stay in Gullis until we pick up and we leave, or until we die. But the Maharal says, as a people, e'efshar, that the Jewish people should ever cease to exist outside of Eretz Yisrael, or really ever, and it's impossible that the Gullah should go on forever because it is unnatural, and because there's a law of history and of physics and of biology that things return to their natural state. It's a guarantee. The Aleph of Geula returns. The Galut, which is missing the Aleph. The Gola, which is missing the Aleph of Geula. The Aleph is really there all the time. Just like in Chait, the Aleph is there the whole time. It's just that when we're in a state of Gullah, the Aleph is in Hester. But it's a guarantee that you can't destroy that Aleph. The Aleph is going back to its most natural Achdus, Hapashim. It goes back to its most natural unity. And even though in a state of Gullus, the Aleph is not even present, you can't even see it in the word, unlike the word Chet, where at least the Aleph is still there. The word Geula and the word Gullus is exactly the same thing. The only difference is the Aleph pronounced or is it not pronounced? If the Aleph is pronounced, that means that we've returned to our natural state. If the Aleph is not pronounced, then we're in Galut, which means we're still in the process of Galut, Milashon, Gal, which means a wave, and also comes from Lashon of Gilui, meaning a wave which crashes down on the beach and reveals whatever is hidden underneath the sand. That's the purpose of Galus. It's crashing down on us and crashing down until that Aleph, which we were living in geographically in Eretz Yisrael, but Hashem said you have to leave Eretz Yisrael to go find that Aleph because there's so much Chet, there's so much hidden Aleph of Chet, that I need to send you far away so that you'll appreciate just how far you've gone. Because geographically being distant, you'll realize how unnatural this is. And no matter how much you try to build up the infrastructure of Gullus, it's just not going to work. And eventually you're going to come back geographically, and eventually you're going to come back spiritually. It's the most guaranteed thing in the world, because it's there all along, and because the whole world is built on it. I wonder if this is a new answer to the question why the Torah doesn't start with an Aleph. The Torah starts with a Beis because the Aleph is that hidden force of tshuva, that in the moment that Hashem, when mentioned the other day, the moment that Hashem sinned by creating the world, in other words, Hashem created a Hester Panim, Hashem created a Chil Hashem, a vacuum of His existence. Hashem created a place where there would be, so to speak, at least the apparent void of God's presence, which is what we do every time we do a chait. But Hashem is allowed to do that. Hashem did it to bring about a higher means, higher ends. So when Hashem did the chilul of tzimtzum, of hiding His presence in the world, at that moment there was a hidden aleph that was there all along, and Bereishis Bara Elokim, Hashem created the world. But the aleph of tshuva is there all along, and the aleph of tshuva will drag the base of Bereishis back. It's a guarantee. If it's true that all of the world is going to return, if it's true that the entire world is going to return, if it's true that those things which are created, so to speak, with God's speech are going to come back, then that thing, that entity called the Jewish people, which is created by the hands of God Himself, that is endowed with the Neshama Elokis, that Hashem blew directly in, as opposed to creating it secondarily with His speech commanding that it be created, Hashem animated it with His very, like the Zohar says, not actually a passage from the Zohar, but it's quoted from the Zohar because it's a paraphrase of the Zohar, Man de nafach mitocho nafach, like the Tanya quotes. One who breathes is breathing from his most innermost point. That's the nefesh of the Jewish people. And if it's true that all of secondary creation is going to return, is it possible, can we fathom that the rest of creation can return without the Koach HaDibor, the Koach HaMedaber, Am Yisrael, who is the Medaber, Lashon Dibor, Dibor Melashon Daber Echad Lador, one leader for the generation, the Jewish people, who are leading their way back, Niskari Vela Ratzon HaMakori Shalem, to return back to the most basic Ratzon of a Jewish person, which is Ritzoneinu Lasos Ritzoncha, to be one with the will of Hashem, Batel Ritzon Chalifnei Ritzono. Batel Ritzon Chalifnei Ritzono, because it really is your Ratzon all along. Rav Kook writes in a number of places that the only thing that causes us to do Averos is a lack in Emunah. And he explains what I mean by a lack in Emunah. Doesn't mean you could swear that you believe in Hashem, you could be crying tears of how close you feel to Hashem. If a person is still capable of doing a chait, it's because of a lack of understanding of what Hashem really is. The more that a person begins to understand and to get into his kishkas, that batel ratzoncha lifnei ratzono is really just aligning your own inner ratzon with your outer ratzon, is really just saying, I know that since I bear a spark of Hashem and my innermost ratzon, that part of me which has no tam, ain't tam l'ratzon, that part which I can't even explain. When somebody asks me, you like vanilla or ice cream? Vanilla ice cream or chocolate ice cream? I say vanilla ice cream. Why? I don't know, I just do. There's a part of you which, even if it's not actualized, it's not revealed, there's an aleph inside of you which is pulling you back, which you may not even feel. At the moment of sin even, it's pulling you back. Which is saying, I want to do Hashem's ratzon. That's that sweet feeling when you're doing the chait. You say, this is not really me. And there's a sweet, together with all the horrible, horrible feeling of doing a chait, of not feeling your inner world and your outer world aligned, like Rav Kook talks about in a few places, not having the inner and the outer world aligned. But there is that little tiny feeling of the aleph, which is still there, which is poking its head out. Which returns us to a life of our most natural, it's the soul in its natural state. That's what the Maharal speaks about, the return to Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is not only a geographical space, but it's also a place in Nefesh. And when a person returns to that natural state, he reveals the Aleph of the Chay, which was hidden there all along. He reveals the Aleph of the Golos, the Geula, which is there all along. Limros Kol Kiros Habarzel. Despite all the iron walls which stand between, which stands in the presence of this powerful force, the Aleph which is there all along. Again, I believe, with complete faith, that Rav Kook here, whether he's conscious of it or not, is talking here, is referencing the famous teaching
of the Degelmachna Ephraim, about the walls which seem to be blocking between the king and his servants. Everyone knows the mashal? If you don't, I'll say it over quickly. And we'll end with this. Derech Tfila. Derech Tfila. This maisa from the Degelmachna Ephraim, this mashal. There was once a king who was endowed with magical powers. He had the koach of sleight of hand in a way. Forget about doing a cheap card trick or making even a plane disappear, which was pretty wild. He had the ability to do amazing magic. So he set up around his palace walls, spikes and with barbed wire, very high walls, very straight walls that would be impossible to climb, moats with alligators and sharks and archers and all these menials to get to his throne room. So the king said, whoever wants, normally you try to get to the king's throne room without his permission, you know you're going to get killed just for trying. The king said, I open invitation, anybody wants to try to get to me, you can come and spend some time with me, ask whatever you want. So the big day arrives, and you know, very quickly, people get to the first wall, they try, 1 hour, 2 hours, forget it, it's impossible, they give up. Some people have been training a little bit stronger, maybe they brought along some ropes, they brought along some, some grappling hooks, so they are more prepared, they start to climb the walls, they climb the first wall, the second wall, they're battling off crocodiles. Eventually, though, everybody wears out, except for one person, who goes all the way, and even though he feels like he wants to give up, he's just pulled further and further in. And in certain versions of the mashal, you know, he gets over like the more difficult parts of the wall, and then he gets in. I don't know if I heard this from someone. I don't think it's in the original Degelmachna Ephraim. I don't know if I heard this from somebody or I made this up myself. He says it like this: you get
carnival over there.
Yeah, you get over the bad parts, and then all of a sudden there's like there's cotton candy. Maybe I heard it from Judah. Yeah. There's cotton candy, and there's there's Carlos and Gabby's, and there's even a hot mikvah, and there's you have gashmias, veruchnias, whatever you want, but not the king himself. You have the trappings. You don't have the king himself. And some people, some people get over all the other hurdles, but they get stuck. They say, oh, this must be what the king wanted from us. He must have wanted to give us all these goodies. But there's one person who's saying that, he's like, this can't be it. And he realizes that all he has to do is just go pat, like when you're going to Meiron, you're going to Rabbi Shimon, you have to just keep your eye on the top of the mountain, and you don't get distracted by the carnival. And he says, forget this, and he starts running towards the king's throne room, and he throws open the door, and the king sees him, and he sees the king, and he says, Abba, and he says, Bini, my son, and it's the king's son. The king's son is the only one who goes all the way in for the answer. But then the king says, you want to see something funny? Turn around. And the sun turns around, and there's no carnival, and there are no walls, and there's no moats, and there's no alligators, and there's no anything, and all the menials were just make-believe. They weren't real. He says, isn't that a good trick? You see how I did Achiza Seinayim? You see how I made it look like there were all these barriers in between us? There were all these metal walls? Limeros kol kiros abarze la'otzer machotzitzim ba'ariz galuso shal teva eitan zeh. You don't think Rav Kook is talking about that? Despite all of those metal walls, which seem to be between you and Hashem, it's not true. There was an aleph that was penetrating all those walls straight through all the time. All you had to do is just touch that. All you had to do is just push the aleph, and there's like an eject button, and it just shoots you right up back to where you came from, back to the king's throne. Because the son of the king came from the king. That's the makor of the son of the king. That's where he began. That's where he started. And since that's where he started, it's a guarantee that's where he's going to end up. No matter how far away he goes, something is pulling him back because that's his makor. That's where he started from. So Hashem should bless us. Hashem should bless us. That we should keep our eye on the prize. We shouldn't get distracted by any carnivals. We shouldn't have any despair from any menios. Hashem should help us to be mechubar to the tzaddikim. Help us to believe in the koach of the aleph that's inside of us. And to know that even though we might be trapped sometimes in galut or in chet, there's a hidden geula and there's a hidden aleph within the chet. We should be zochet to see it.